This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode number 85, was recorded on December 23rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Happy holidays. This episode of Macro Voices is brought to you by TopTradersOnPlug.com, which happens to be my own favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. Alhambra Investment CIO Jeffrey Snyder is back with us. And Jeff, you know, every time we get together, or almost every time, it seems like the dollar is the puzzle that we've been trying to solve. And it gets overlooked in a lot of cases, even by the Fed. So I want to come back and, no surprise to our listeners, probably focus again and get your update. I know that you don't ignore the dollar, so let's do a year-end wrap-up for today's show and get your perspective on U.S. dollar, where it's headed, and what we need to know about in terms of what to expect for next year.
You know, Eric, first of all, it's really an odd way for things to go. It's a really odd way for the Fed to conduct its monetary policy, since they pay very little or no attention to the way the dollar's behaving. And that's, you know, that's the opposite of the way it used to be back when, you know, back in the old days, all they did was focus on the dollar, but for obviously very different reasons. But, you know, that's starting to change again. People are starting to pay attention to the dollar, and we'll get into that in a minute here. First, though, let's go back to last year. So if we start on slide three, specifically last November, going by the conventional view, which, you know, starts and ends with what Jay Powell says, nobody ever disagrees with the guy, even though it's so easy to do and to do it regularly. Back in November 2018, though, he was on top of the world. The economy, he said, had finally recovered from the 2008 crisis. And furthermore, it was the Fed who was in large part responsible for that. What that meant, if we go to slide four, was that policymakers believed that they had finally fulfilled both of their mandates, stable prices plus full employment. Inflation was going to tick up because the labor market was unusually tight. Both of those things were very good, by the way. But because the unemployment rate said that the labor market had erased every last bit of slack, the Fed was going to have to slow things down in 2019 because it didn't want the inflation part to get out of control. So in the conventional view from November 2018, 2019 was going to be very good. Even the big monetary problems were finally going to be the good ones. So as a result, if we go to slide five, the FOMC's models were going to start to project an even more aggressive rate hike regime. They had been saying, you know, maybe four hikes for 2019, but they really did begin to think about adding another one because of the unemployment rate and what they thought about in terms of inflation. It was going to be so good in 2019 that, you know, maybe five rate hikes at the far end of the model's ranges, maybe even six. But if we go to slide six, obviously that didn't happen. It was quite the opposite, suggesting that, you know, officials, they didn't just miss something. It was something big that they had missed.
Okay, hang on a second, Jeff, because it, not only is that all true, but it wasn't just rate hikes and the Fed's influence. We've been talking about the Fed here. But what about the so-called bond kings? At that time, they were talking about, hey, baby, it's all over. We get past 3.10 on the 10-year. You know, we're going to much, much higher longer-term interest rates. There was declarations that the bond bull market is over. A new secular bond bear market is in play. That was very popular rhetoric, a year and a half ago. What happened?
Yeah, it was mid-November, too, same time frame when Jeffrey Gundlach came out and said that, you know, a mismatch between the overwhelming supply of Treasury bonds and the sinking demand as foreigners sold them was, in his words, going to keep driving yields higher and higher and higher. But it wasn't just, you know, bond fund managers that were trying to talk up their Treasury short positions and their negative duration. The idea of higher interest rates in bond markets was widespread. If you go to slide seven, the Fed's New York branch conducts a regular survey of the primary dealer banks they do business with. And I want to point out here that these surveys are answered by the economists who work at each of these dealer banks, not the traders themselves who actually manage each firm's positions. And what these economists said, at least about the general direction of interest rates, Treasury yields heading into 2019, was pretty much consistent with at least what we were told was the consensus. Only 21% of the primary dealers thought that the 10-year yield would be less than 3%. 38% thought it would fall in the range of 3 to 3.5%. And another 27% thought it would be even higher than that. So economists and policymakers together were pretty sure that bond yields along with short-term rates, would all keep moving higher. Now, if you go to slide 8, obviously that didn't happen either. Again, something big was missing from the forecast. In the case of FRBNY's primary dealer survey, what was missing, and at least in a narrow sense, was the branch was asking the wrong people. Had it surveyed the trailers, especially back then, at that time in November 2018, you know, those down in the financial and monetary trenches that were seeing things up close, they might have gotten very different responses.
Right. Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago as well, and many times before that. There were already warning signs back in around November of 2018 that not everything was quite as hunky-dory as Jay Powell and everyone else had made it seem.
Yeah, only a couple of weeks after Powell's late November speech, the one I showed you earlier, at his December 2018 press conference on what I'm showing you on slide 9, which was the one that followed the last rate hike, the chairman couldn't help but notice that some things weren't adding up. By then, of course, the stock market was in a dive, so Powell had to at least acknowledge the possibility that something wasn't right. But, you know, here in this one quote, what I'm showing you here, he got the essence of it right, even while intentionally downplaying its significance. The problems were showing up more so overseas, outside the U.S., just as, you know, Eric, you and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, and, you know, how it couldn't have been trade wars. What happened was the dollar. The dollar changed everything in 2018. Go to slide 10. It has taken economists some time to figure out, you know, what really is the most obvious correlation of the last few decades. But they're starting to slowly recognize, at least on the surface, that this is a big thing. When the dollar rises, it's trouble. Powell and the Fed did their absolute best to ignore the dollar throughout 2018, as their projections showed. But from December going forward, that was no longer possible. Yields plummeted around the world. Rate hikes transitioned to a Fed pause and then rate cuts all in a relatively short time frame.
Jeff, we've been talking about what happened in 2018, but I want to go back even further to December of 2017. Now, we did a 5-part series called The Anatomy of the U.S. Dollar Endgame. The link, listeners, for that series you can find at macrovoices.com/EDU for Euro Dollar University. You'll see the Euro Dollar University series there, and you'll also see the 5-part U.S. Dollar Endgame series. So if you haven't listened to that, it's definitely still relevant and still worth a listen. We had you, Jeff, along with Luke Grohman and Mark Yusko. At that time, at the end of 2017, the consensus view was that the dollar, which had been falling through 2017, was going to keep falling. It had dropped very significantly through the year. A lot of people thought that as the world normalized and globally synchronized growth really started to take off, that that's what was going to happen, was the dollar was going to continue. And at least in the case of Mark Yusko and Luke Grohman, they really thought, okay, the top is in, not just on this cycle, but the top's in, period, for the dollar. They thought a dollar decline that would mark the end of the dollar's regime as global reserve currency was upon us. So the reason that I'm bringing this all up, Jeff, is I know you've got a slide about it included in here, and it's not just that you and I went on record saying the dollar was probably going to turn around and go up, which was very much out of consensus. But what stuck with me was how adamant you were at that time, back in the end of 2017, saying that there was nothing bullish about the U.S. dollar rising. So you said it's going to go up, but you actually, I think you took objection. I called you a dollar bull, and you interrupted me and said, no, don't call me a dollar bull. I'm not bullish on the dollar. I just think it's going to appreciate for a bunch of other reasons. Please elaborate.
Yeah, if we go to slide 11, you know, that's really the main point, the thing that Jay Powell was missing throughout 2018 and what we were talking about before, just before it happened, you know, in December 2017. When the dollar goes up, nothing good comes out of it. I mean, sure, it's great if you're long the dollar some way in the portfolio position, like if you're long U.S. Treasuries and you've got a lot of duration. But for the world economy, for you and me and our listeners, you know, the dollar going up doesn't signal good things. What drives the dollar higher isn't what everyone is taught. It isn't the difference in economic conditions. You know, before everybody would say, oh, the U.S. is the cleanest, dirty shirt or whatever. It's not interest rate differentials. It's whether or not the euro-dollar system is performing. And, you know, to really oversimplify, if there is a global dollar shortage in this offshore place, then that means the dollar's going to go up. Now, the reason I said we were just waiting for the next tightening event to take place was because in November, December 2017, there were all sorts of triggers and warning signs. The global basis went haywire, as well as, you know, dramatic flattening in the yield curve in euro dollar futures. There was also a lot happening in the repo market. long before tax reform hit and the deficit began to rise. There was a huge spike in repo fails during December 2017, along with a lot of other indications that, you know, that told you liquidity-wise and global dollar, this thing was starting to go wrong again for the fourth time in the last decade. And then, of course, not too long after that, in January 2018, as you can see on slide 12, sure enough, the dollar stops falling, and then a little further into 2018, it began to move steadily, relentlessly higher again. And once it did, it led to even more obvious warning signs. You know, foreign central banks began to sell their treasuries again, which is a huge warning about a rising dollar. You know, then all the stuff that happened on May 29th, 2018, Eric, we covered that before. There were inverted curves that follow that. So, you know, there's all these escalating liquidity episodes that Jay Powell all throughout 2018 ignored and downplayed. So last year wasn't the year of the global boom like it was supposed to have been. It was the year the dollar turned and set the world on track for its next downturn, as you can see on slide 13.
And that's what happened in 2019. That's why we got the rate cuts from the Fed as well as all the other central banks around the world. Too many to count now. Everyone was supposed to be normalizing monetary policies and bond markets. Remember quantitative tightening? That was a trend that didn't last very long, did it?
No.
But it's like that whole thing just went, you know, we it's all changing. We're going to quantitative tightening. The era of quantitative easing that lasted a decade is over. It's all quantitative tightening from here. That lasted like a couple of weeks or something. It's more than that, but not a whole lot more than that. Now we got more rate cuts, more QE, but we're not allowed to call it QE, and more of the same disappointments. The global recovery is pushed back yet again. So it seems that central banks maybe learned their lesson from last year. They were missing something big. The Fed, at least, forgot to include the dollar in its analysis. But I'll play the straight line man here, Jeff. But surely now this must mean that officials have got it all straightened out. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, not quite. If anything, they don't quite know what to think. And you can see it in their latest forecast. The models aren't offering them very much clarity at all. If you go to slide 14, the FOMC's projections say monetary policy is on hold, at least for all of 2020. You know, they're not going to go higher. They're not going to go lower. You know, and that's really just them unable to predict which way things are going from here. You know, is the U.S. economy all clear, as everyone now seems to believe? Or are there still problems out there lurking which can materialize as a further downside? The models are erring on the side of caution. They want to think this whole growth scare thing is behind us, but they aren't really sure about it. If you go to slide 15, economists at the primary dealers don't really have any idea either. And it's interesting how they are split now as to which way they think the 10-year yield will go from here. A little more than half think it will continue to be less than 2% at the end of 2020, while the other half think maybe a little bit higher than 2%. And I do think that one of the reasons for this, you know, you call it paralysis if you want, is the dollar. Economists and their models haven't quite figured it all out yet, but they're starting to understand the basics. The dollar ties the world economy together, and the U.S. can't escape the global direction. That's what they've now incorporated, these foreign economic elements. You know, the dollar goes up, that means very real downside risks. They ignored them in the rising dollar in 2018, but now that the world economy is synchronized in a downturn, that's what's got their models on hold in 2019, peering over into 2020.
Okay, Jeff, so whether people realize it or not, the dollar is a really big deal, and if it continues to go up, it's not good for the global economy. But hang on a second here. I know I ask you this almost every time, but we've got a lot of smart people now. Now, admittedly, they're the same people that were saying this at the end of 2017. But they're saying, hey, look, Jeff, wake up. October 2nd, whatever the early October date was, that was it for the dollar. It topped out there, and it's done, and it's going to keep going down. We've seen the top in the dollar, and it's all downhill from here. What are you seeing?
Well, you know, I don't see much that's different, unfortunately. As I said before, all the way back in 2017, you know, I watch a broad range of liquidity indications and balance sheet type constructions. Anything that will tell me what the global financial system is doing, how it is behaving, that's where these euro dollars come from. They're all bank liabilities. And one of those pieces of data, which I'll show you here on the last few slides, starting with slide 16, it's a little appreciated memo item which the Federal Reserve puts out on a weekly basis. Foreign governments, central banks, and commercial banks, they hold a lot of treasuries, trillions of dollars in treasuries. Since they act often as U.S. dollar reserves for these holders, you know, basically potential correspondent reserves, it's easier for them to just ask the Fed to custody those securities on their behalf, which the Fed does. And then it reports the aggregate balance to us, and is what I'm showing you here on these last few slides. The changes in balance correlate very strongly to changes in the dollar. To put it simply, when more treasuries show up in Fed custody on behalf of all of those foreign entities, it suggests the dollar system is functioning reasonably well. More plentiful dollars, or at least not as much of a global dollar shortage, you know, more of these dollars end up flowing around the world, allowing foreigners to buy more of these treasuries as reserves. So the dollar's exchange value falls, confirming those very things. And then, obviously, it goes the other way when treasuries start to disappear from Fed custody. When that balance goes down, it can suggest that there are problems in the offshore Eurodollar markets. And what might be happening as those treasuries disappear from the Fed's reporting is that, you know, there's growing unavailability in the repo market in terms of collateral or just broad concerns in the repo market, or the just general selling of U.S. treasuries, which foreign governments are forced to do in order to try to manage their local dollar short. In other words, falling treasuries from the Fed's custody, what they're showing you here, it strongly suggests more of the offshore global dollar shortage situation. These are funding problems. They're indicative of funding problems. And that equates to a rising dollar, as well as why that rising dollar is not really a bullish thing. This custody data, as you can see on these last few slides, isn't good news either. Treasuries continue to flow out of the Fed's custody, suggesting that these foreign owners are being forced to use them in some fashion because they are running into continued trouble in global funding in Eurodollars. In short, this indicates more rising dollar stuff, and I don't just mean the dollar's exchange value.
Okay, so more continued dollar strength is what you're looking for in 2020. We're going to have to leave it there for 2019. Jeff, I want to thank you both for today's interview and for all of your excellent content that you've contributed to Macro Voices over the last year. We look forward to getting you back in the new year for another update. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, my favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. And remember to head over and listen to my conversation with its host, Niels Kastrup Larsen, which we released on September 7th, 2019. To get the slide deck that Niels shared, head over to TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro slides. And as a listener of my show, you're also able to get Neil's latest book for free by going to toptradersunplugged.com/macro. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.